The shir is based on a one-word question: why? Why did Israel have to go the horrible experience of Egypt? The slavery, the persecution, the torture, Jewish children thrown into the Nile. Why was this necessary? We know, of course, that it was part of a divine plan. God had already told Avram Avinu at the Brid Bein HaBetachim, the covenant between the parts, he already told him, Yodo HaTeda, you should know, Ki Ger Yiyazaracho Be'eretz Lolohem, your children are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs, Va'avodum, they will enslave them, and not only enslave them, Vi'inuotam, and they're going to torture them for 400 years. But you should know, God says, I will judge that nation. And afterwards, Yetzu b'rechush gadol. Afterwards, they're going to go out with great wealth. So we know that this is all part of a divine plan. If it's part of a divine plan, then it behooves us to ask, why was all of this necessary? Jews were already in Eretz Israel. God could have established a Jewish national entity with the children of Yaakov right there in Mitzrayim. Who needed all of this? Who needed it all? The Abarbanel, whom we only mentioned the first part of what he says, but we didn't get into the heart of what he says. The Abarbanel says we're going to have to look at it either as punishment for something, and if it's not punishment for something, then the divine plan must have some kind of rhyme and reason behind it. So what we said so far, we learned last week the Ramban. The Ramban in Parashat Lech Lecha, who says that, take a look, there's such a similar pattern by Avraham Avinu. He comes to Eretz Israel, there's a famine, he goes down to Egypt, he's in a sense held captive there. God brings all sorts of miraculous punishment upon Taro, and then he goes out with great wealth. The Ramban takes a look at the pattern, it fits. It fits so perfectly. So therefore it must be related to Avraham Avinu. If it's related to Avraham Avinu, so he says, his children are being punished because Avram shouldn't have gone down to Egypt, though there was a famine in the land. He should not have placed his wife in such grave danger. But what we see from the Ramban, and by the way, that's not the end, the total picture of the Ramban. But what we see from the Ramban is, if you find a similar pattern, and he found what seems to be a very, very similar pattern. The same thing. And of course, the Ramban explains most of Sefer Bereshit, that whatever happened to the fathers was the indication of what was going to happen to the children. They are the ones who prepare the way. They pave the way for their children. So therefore, he sees that there's a direct relationship between the Avram experience and the Mitzrayim experience. We also learned the Nitziv. The Nitziv takes us in a completely different direction. At the beginning of Parashat Shemot, it says, "Vatimalei ha'aretz otam." The land became full of Jews. Not only were they living in Goshen, but they poured over and spilled out into Mitzrayim itself. And there he develops the idea that was, of course, extremely significant for him in his time. And I believe it's most probably very significant for us in our time. We're not going to become full-fledged members in the family of nations. By the way, if you can choose your family, and here's a unique circumstances where you can choose your family, I don't know if I'd want to be a member of the Mishpucha. There's a lot of, there are a lot of not nice members in that Mishpucha. But he says that if Jews are going to attempt to mix and to mingle, which ultimately is going to mean assimilation into marriage, and we think that by being close to them, We're going to live next door to them. We're going to engage in all sorts of activities with them. They're going to like us. So the Netziv says precisely the opposite. The closer you get to them, the more they're going to despise you. And then we learn the great Netziv on the words of Bilam, Am levodod yishdon uvagoyim lo yitchashav, a people that dwells alone and is not counted amongst the nations of the world. And the Netziv gives his own unique perush. Am levodod, if the people is alone, if they're separate, if they're distinct, yishdon, then they're going to be able to dwell in the world. Uvagoyim, but if they want to become part of the nations of the world, lo yitchashav, they are not going to be considered. On the contrary, they are going to become hated and hunted and despised and persecuted. So, that's a second approach. And of course, he proves that Jews lived side by side with the Egyptians, because the whole story of the night of Pesach is that God has to pass over from one house to the next. One house there's an Egyptian, the next house there's a Jew. If they would have all remained in the land of Goshen as a distinct unit, all that happened may not have happened. That's one way of looking at it. Isn't that what Paro himself said? There's so many. They're all around. Alright. We then began to learn the Medrash Tanchuma, that big Medrash over there. Let me take you through that Medrash in brief. You're just going to have to... I'll tell you what the Medrash says. You know what? We'll only read one section, but I'll tell you what the Medrash says. Medrash says, these are the names of the children of Israel that came down to Egypt with Yaakov. It's all based on one pasuk. Choseich shifto sone dino. I told you, this pasuk you have to learn by the end of the year. You have to know this pasuk. You can impress people if you can say this pasuk in the original. Choseich shifto sone dino. The one who withholds the stick from a child ultimately will end up hating his son. That's how the Medrash is going to learn it. The Ohavo, you want to love him, and if you really do love him, Shikaro Musar, you are going to admonish him, you're going to chastise him, you're going to give him guidance and direction, even though it may be painful to you and to him. Life isn't a bowl of cherries. Children need to be educated. And education isn't something that is simply handed on a silver platter. It's not a bowl of cherries. And therefore, Ohavo, if you want to love him, and you really love a child, Shikaro Musar, you have to give him Musar. Okay. And the Medrash goes on to describe a number of Gedolei Olam who didn't do that, and they suffered because of it. They begin with Avram. And of course, we can relate very much to that. The fact that Avram didn't educate Ishmael, and we're suffering for that up until the present day. If only he would have done a job on Ishmael. But it wasn't in the cards. Chazar b'tshuva doesn't mean that the children that came after were all chazrei b'tshuva. There's no guarantee. So he did tshuva. So what? So Yishmael did tshuva. Meanwhile, he had children all over that did not become balei tshuva. Yeah. don't be too impressed by the idea that he did tshuva. So there was a moment over there at his father's funeral that he realized that Yitzchak is greater than he is. Okay, a grace about tshuva is a gevar, and you understand, Yishmael. What about educating his child? Of course. Maybe he had no ability. Well, that's so racist, you understand? I mean, they're racist. I mean, you know, if you would say... I can't even repeat it because we'll be condemned in all of the left-wing papers in the country. He didn't have ability. Think like this. Even if one doesn't have ability, but everybody has the ability to be decent and to be good and to be humane. And here it says that he taunted Yitzchak. He became a terrible influence on Yitzchak, and Sarah wouldn't stand for it. And Sarah had the strength and the guts to tell Avram, get rid of this woman and her child. He sent them away. And the Medrash says, do you think that Avram had nothing more to give her when he sent them out? Nothing more to give her than a loaf of bread and a canteen of water? The man was wealthy. Why didn't he? Why didn't he give him more? Why did they end up out in the desert and there's no water left anymore? Because he despised Yishmael. Choseich shifto, the Medrash says. Choseich shifto. The one who withholds the rod is going to end up hating his son. He gives the next example as Esav. It says at the beginning of Parshas told us that Yitzchak loved Esav. By the way, it says over there in present tense, V'rivka, and Rivka loves Yaakov. Yitzchak, it says in past tense that he loved Esav. You know why it's in past tense, according to the Medrash? Because the end is that he despised him. And the Medrash seems to be saying, and you know, we don't have to take it literally, that Yitzchak did not educate him the way he should have. I have difficulty even saying it out of my mouth, because the fact is that Yitzchak showed so much patience and so much love. But the end is, maybe there was something more that could have been done. Kiyotze Bo, the third example that the Medrash brings, David. David had two children out of the many, but two children whom he didn't admonish, whom he didn't chastise. He had two children that simply needed a great deal more of attention and didn't get it. And the two of them were Avshalom and Adoniyahu ben Chagit. Adoniyahu, that was, we read that Adoniyahu ben Chagit is the one that, as it seems as though the sun is setting on the life of David, he is the one who gathers his friends around him and lets out the word that Adoniyahu is king without his father's permission. And there, that first chapter in Sefer Melachim, Bathsheba comes to David, and she gets David to act, and he rises like a lion with his last strength, and he puts down the rebellion by anointing and appointing Shlomo to be king. There the pasuk says, at the beginning of Malachim, an unbelievable pasuk. The pasuk says, V'lo atzovo aviv miyomav. His father, all of his days, never made him unhappy. V'lo atzovo aviv miyomav. You understand? The pasuk clearly is condemning David, that he never said anything to Adoniyahu that would have made him feel bad. So he was spoiled. Avshalom too was spoiled. And therefore, a son rebels against his father. You see, you know what it really means? It means even more. It means if you're going to be good to the kids, they're going to really like you. You know what it really means? You're going to be good to the kids. Choseich shifto. Oi, I'm just thinking of a noob shot. The one who withholds the rod, sone b'no, his son hates him. Isn't that a nice pshat? The medrash and the usual pshat is the one who withholds, spare the rod, sone b'no, the father ultimately hates the son. And you know what it can also mean? The son begins to hate the father. On some level, why didn't you set boundaries for me? Why didn't you teach me what's right and what's wrong? I like that. I'm going to have to make sure about that one of these days. So you know what you're saying? Masha said, maybe he thinks his father doesn't love him. And the father doesn't admonish him so that the son should love him. So what really happens over here, nobody's doing the right thing. If I'll be nice to him, whenever he wants allowance, I'll give him allowance. Whatever he wants to do, he'll love me. The end is, it's not so. He's going to hate you. All right. Now, if you take a look in the column on the left-hand side. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top. It's underlined. This is the second half of the Medrash. The first half of the Medrash was talking about the one who does not admonish his son will hate his son. Now the Medrash goes the other way around and says, V'ohavo, the second half of the Pasuk is, the one who truly loves a child, Shicharo Musar, is going to find ways to instruct him. That's also Avram, just as we used Avram as an example of somebody who did not educate Yishmael, but on the other hand, he did a good job with Yitzchak. Some people don't win them all. Ze Avram, she, huh? All right, you know, if the Medrash is saying a nice thing about Avram, let it be. She said that, well, to raise Yitzchak, he had sorrow with her. By the way, truth is that you're not wrong. You're not wrong. You need to. Sorry like that. I agree with you. I got out of that one. Zavram. This is Avraham. Sheyiser et Yitzchak. V'limdo et ha-Torah v'hidricho bidrachav. This is Avram who admonished Yitzchak, taught him Torah. The word admonish is not a... You see, the word Yisar, and this is going to be very important, the word Yisar comes from the word Yisudim. Now, sometimes we think that Yisudim only means suffering, torture, punishment. It comes really from the root Musar. Musar is really, is to give Musa, to teach. Now, sometimes teaching may even require pain. Not necessarily pain that's inflicted by somebody else. We'll see. There may be pain. It's painful to grow up. And even after you grow up, there's pain. Pain is part of the process of growth. No pain, no gain. No pain, no growth. That's when we're talking about Yisurim, that's what we mean. And you're going to see how the Medrash, the finale, the grand finale of the Medrash. So anyway, here he says, Avram, he taught Yitzchak. It says, Eikev HaShashom Avram Bekoli Vayishmor Ishmarti. And it says, Eilet Toldot Yitzchak Ben Avram, Avram Holitet Yitzchak, Lilamet Hosho Hayodome La'ovik Bekol Dover. Yitzchak was the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. The repetition in Torah is to tell us that Yitzchak was the mirror image of Avram. Avram created somebody in his own image. He was similar to his father, benoy, in beauty, wisdom, strength, wealth, ubmas in tovim, and good deeds. And they prove it. Take a look. At the time of the Akedah, he was 37 years old. And he was ready. He was ready to undergo the Akedah. Ready to undergo the Akedah. Then the Medrash is going to go on to the next one and says Yitzchak. So he had an Esav, but he also had a Yaakov. And this Yaakov became the image of Yitzchak. He taught him Torah. He gave him direction. He formed him. He forged him. He made him. That's O Havo Shicharo Musar. If you love him, you admonish him. Everything that Yitzchak learned from his father, he taught to Yaakov. The Achakach, I'm reading a few lines later, it says, Pedash Me'avotav, when Yaakov left his father, Nitman Be'Beit Eva Lumo Torah, he hid in the house of Eva to study Torah. Leficha Zora, Zocha, that's why he was Zocha, to inherit Eretz Yisrael. Same thing is true, Ela Shmot, Bnei Yisrael, these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. You know why their names are mentioned again? The Medrash says they were all the image of Yaakov. Yaakov was the first one in history to succeed with the whole family. Was it painful? Or he was raising those 12 children painful. When they were young, when they were then Zazan given klein, the given klein itzuras. But when they grew up, they shouldn't even grace it, so as you understand. Yaakov Avinu raised 12 children who turned out to... Who does she mean by the 13th? Dina. I could have thought that she was including Menashe and Ephraim, so in addition to the 12 tribes, Dina. Okay. Right, I see I'm getting the works today. They know that I'm not feeling well, so they're going after me, the whole bunch of them. Yaakov Avinu raised 13 children. 12 boys and Dina Keneged Kulam. I'm not getting it. He's going to go on to tell you that David HaMelech had an Avshalom. And he had an Antonio ben Chagid, but he also had a Shlomo HaMelech. Now I want to take you to the finale of the Medrash. It's underlined. Tanya. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, this is at the beginning of Sefer Shemot. You understand, a Medrash at the beginning of Sefer Shemot. A famous, famous statement of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Reb Shimon bar Yochai Omer at Motza, you find Sholosh Matanos Tovot Natana Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael. There are three good gifts that God gave to the Jewish people. V'lo Notan Otam Ela Al Yedei Yisurim. He gave them only through suffering, through pain. Famous, famous Gemara. HaTorah, V'Eretz Yisrael, V'Olam Haba. These are the three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba, and all of them come only through suffering. And then the Medrash goes on to bring us Pesukim for it. Torah, because it says, Ashvei Ageva, fortune is the men Asher Tiyasadenu, that God will cause him to suffer. And by the way, we have to find a better word than suffer, because it always leaves the impression of punishment. But it is pain. Pain is better than suffering. There must be even a better word. Three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people, and all of them are acquired only through hard work and pain. Nobody receives those gifts handed to them. By the way, this is my doomsday statement to the rabbis. I'll explain. There was a period of time when I was indeed suffering that somebody would tell me, well, listen, Rabbi Gold, you know, Eretz Yisrael, Niknes, Al Yedei Yisurim. that I didn't kill 10 people during that period of time, you understand? It was a matter of great self-control. Yeah, I understand. God tell me, yeah. All right, okay. But I use this statement to the rabbis now. You know, every so often, people will tell me, it's not such an important mitzvah, you know, it's only a mitzvah kiyumit, it's not a mitzvah chiyuvit, it's not obligatory, it's hain and it's hair. And today, there are a bunch of tzigayim over there, you know, there are upper kursim and there are kaifrim, you know, and there's chilul Shabbos and there's achilas treifas, and, you meet these people who have every sick excuse in the world. And so I used it on one occasion publicly, and have you ever heard anybody who says to the Rabbeinu Shlomo, listen, he gave us a great gift called Torah. No, thank you. I don't really want your great gift. You know, one can even quote Mishlei Sonei Matanos Yichya, the one who hates gifts will live. I don't want, keep your gift. You haven't ever heard anybody say, Olam Abba, that's really terrific. Olam Abba, it's great. It's a great gift, you know, but no thank you, Rabbi Mishlei. God forbid, you're kidding me? Tyra! Eretz, Olam Abba, Olam Abba. And who knows how many former Yidden can walk around and say, Vaishim, you gave us a good gift called Eretz Yisrael? Keep your gift. I'm Michael, you're the gift. It's unbelievable. Usually, when I say this to somebody and I choose them well, the guy turns green, red, pale, white. Sholosh Matanas Tovas, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And by the way, the same fellow who feels this way, that he's Michael, the big matan of Eretz Yisrael, most probably celebrates Lag Bomer, you understand, the yard site of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. By the Medrash bringing this, at the end of this introduction to Sefer Shmos, you know what the Medrash is telling us? The Medrash is telling us that in the process of the Mitzrayim experience, Jews were being prepared in the crucible of suffering and pain to be able to receive Torah, to be worthy of Eretz Yisrael, to ultimately inherit Olam Haba. The Mitzrayim experience was not one in which God wanted Jews to suffer. What he wanted is that they should acquire Ruchush Gadol, great wealth. And all great wealth is only going to come through the crucible, the purifying crucible. And we're going to, that's what I want to elaborate on now. Yes? All right. Then you're going to make me run ahead of myself. So I will run ahead of myself. Because I simply will not permit this year to go into a third inning. And, you know, whatever I have left, we can say next year, Mir Hashem Gesundheit. There's a very beautiful and a powerful essay by Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. There's one little section of it that we talked about some years ago, but we're going to take the major section of this essay. He says, he asks all, huh? No, it's not Kol Dodi. Even though there are references to it in Kol Dodi, but no. Yemei Zikaron, beginning on page 92. I'm going to tell you what the Chof says. He begins by asking the question that we asked. Why did Jews have to go through this whole process? Why did they have to go through Mitzrayim process? Who needed it? The Jews were in Eretz Yisrael. God could have established a Jewish political independent entity right there on the spot. Why do they have to come back from Mitzrayim, you know? Why not this way? Huh?
Why did they have to go down?
Right? This is the question that we're dealing with. Then he, of course, asks, and with this also we've talked about a number of different levels in the past. God tells Avram, they're going to suffer for 400 years, they're going to be enslaved. I'm going to judge the people who enslaved them. And afterwards they're going to go out with great wealth. There's some kind of a sour note over here, as though the suffering of 400 years and Jewish children thrown into the Nile, it's all worth it, because at the end we're going to go out ungestopped with golden silver. As the Chov, I think I remember saying, what did they need? They needed the shmatas of Mitzrayim, you understand? The clothing of Mitzrayim. Next year, most probably, it'll be out of style. Right. So this is the Rechush Gadol, and this makes it all worthwhile. We're going to go through this horrible experience, but the end is, oh boy, there won't be an overdraft in the bank. Of course it can't mean that. Of course it can't mean that. So he bases what he says on a Zohar. We know, of course, we say it in the Haggadah, Arami Oyved Avi, Lavan wanted to destroy my father. He went down to Egypt. And what happened in Egypt? They became Goy Godol. They became a great nation. God is going to give Eretz Israel to a Goy Godol, a great nation. He's going to give Torah, not to individuals, not to a family, not to 12 or 13, with their parents and grandchildren. Torah is going to be given to a people, to an Am, to a Goy Godol. And where do they become a Goy Godol? They become a Goy Godol in Mitzrayim. And the Zohar says the following. Before they went out of Egypt, they were not a great nation. It's only when they went out of Egypt that they could be considered a great nation. And the Zohar uses a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Kishoshana bein hachochim, kein ra'ayati bein habanot. Like a rose amongst the thorns, so is my beloved amongst the daughters, all of the nations of the world. And the Zohar says, a rose grows best amongst the thorns, because the thorns don't need much nourishment, so all of the nourishment that's available goes straight to the rose. The most beautiful rose grows amongst the thorns. Well, the Shoshana Ben HaChochim are the Jews who come out of Egypt, the Am, the Goy Godol that comes out of Egypt. They are the rose that comes from amongst the thorns. And here the Rav Giz says the following. In order for one to truly appreciate and understand with every fiber of his being what is good, what's the definition of good? One has to come face to face with absolute evil. In order to be able to appreciate what is sanctity and purity, one has to go through the experience of that which is defiled and that which is ugly. God created a world that one can say, the Rav uses the example of colors. In order to appreciate certain colors, you have to put two different colors one next to the other, and then you can see the difference, and you can appreciate one over the other. He says to create the kind of people that Rabbeinu Shlomo wanted to give Torah to them, He needed a people that would be able to truly understand what's good and what's evil. They needed the Beit Sefer, the greatest school for the Jewish people, was a school called Mitzrayim. Came face to face with absolute barbarity and cruelty. And by coming face to face with that, they are going to emerge from Mitzrayim as a great people. In order for a human being to be able to identify with good, and that he should be able to experience and truly appreciate what is meant by good, what's meant by beautiful, what is exalted, it only comes as a result of comparing and contrasting with the complete opposite. The complete opposite. Goy Godol, a great nation or a big nation, doesn't mean a nation with military power, with numbers. Goy Godol is a people with great moral and spiritual strength. And that's what Klal Yisrael is going to achieve in Mitzrayim. The Rechush Godol, the great wealth that they come out of Egypt with, is not the shmatas of Mitzrayim. It's not that at all. They have gone through an experience that is going to change the nature of the Jewish people markedly until the end of time. We have in our genes, and we don't want to admit it because sometimes we get the feeling that, we're such a special people. Yes, we are a special people. We are a special people. Despite the fact that there was an article, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Yes, I don't want that on the tape. Where somebody defended the chief rabbi of England on his latest book where he... I was involved in that struggle then for different reasons. We have to appreciate it, just like there's Jewish truth, there's Christian truth, and there's Muslim truth. Och and vey, Muslim truth. We're being killed and slaughtered by Muslim truth. And we were killed and slaughtered throughout history by Christian truth. All the same. That's right. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All the same. Unbelievable. And now, but if you want to be a liberal and you want to be accepted by the whole world, you have to be able to talk in terms of the unity of all of mankind. There is no unity. We're not part of the unity. They don't want us. All right. Okay, I got that off, and that was very painful. That was what you saw him. I'm having difficulty. In Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael underwent an experience that was going to change them dramatically for all of history. That's what happened. And then the Rav goes one step further. And this one step further is very important. He says, Lo Tirzach, thou shalt not kill. Anybody would assume that Lo Tirzach is so basic and so fundamental. The Torah wouldn't even have to tell us about Lo Tirzach, thou shalt not kill. But then he says, but take a look. It's not so easily accepted by people in the world. Not only it's not so easily accepted in the world, the brothers of Yosef were ready to do just that. L'chu v'nahargeyu, let's go and kill him. Lo telech rochel ba'amecho, you should not go amongst your people and speak evil about one another, seems to be such a fundamental rule of human conduct. What do you mean? You're walking around besmirching people? I don't know. Yosef doesn't seem to have understood that fully. He brings evil talk of his brothers to his father. Pasuk in Torah that says, Lo tisne torchicha bilvavecha. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. So simple. So clear. What are you talking about? Hate? Perish the thought. Banish the feeling. What about the brothers of Yosef? Vayosifu od lisno oto. They hated him because of his dreams. Gedolei olam, giants, great people, educated in the house of Yaakov Avinu, yet they don't fully appreciate the meaning of what seems to be so fundamental. In order that Jews for all time should be able to fully understand and appreciate the depth of Lo Tirzach, you shall not kill. Lo Telech Rachel, you shall not be a talebearer. Lo Tisne Tochicha Bilvavecha. You know what has to happen? They're going to have to come face to face with it. Of all the homes into which Yosef is sold in Mitzrayim, it's to the house of Potiphar. You know who Potiphar was? He was the chief executioner in Egypt. I can imagine the Rav describing it. He lives in a house where he most probably has to watch how Potiphar, surrounded by a bloodthirsty mass of people, he pulls the trapdoor and watches as people are hung until they're dead. And the crowd is cheering. And Yosef is watching this. Yosef is brought in to the worst house in all of Egypt, where he's going to see cruelty and brutality unparalleled and unmatched. Evil reports. He brought evil reports. Poor Yosef finds himself in the house of Potiphar, accused by his wife. It's a blood libel. Accused by the wife of Potiphar. He never did it. Never did it. And there he is. It's a lie. But nobody cares. He doesn't even have the opportunity to plead his case. And what about his brothers? They come down and Yosef accuses them of being spies. You know, it's a lie. Oh, are they suffering? Everybody is suffering. Everybody is suffering. Yosef is the one who finally has to provide for all of Egypt. For the whole world. He sees a world turned into slaves. Turned into slaves. You know what he's going to learn? You know what he's going to learn from all of this? When your brother falls, assist him, help him. Don't close your hand. Don't close your heart. Human beings have to be taken care of. You have to provide for them. There shouldn't be any hungry in the world. There shouldn't be illness in the world. Most probably we would call this the school of hard knocks. Klal Yisrael, Yosef and his brothers and all of Klal Yisrael are going to get a PhD in humanity, in feeling, in sensitivity. Mitzvah after mitzvah is Zecher liYetziat Mitzrayim, a commemoration of the Egypt experience. What's the Chav really saying? He's really said two things. But the two things are one. I had started out by saying that there are those whose approach to the whole Mitzrayim experience is its punishment. The Rambam, for example, said it's punishment for Avram who went down to Egypt. Okay, it's punishment. Then there are those who say it's not punishment. For the Abarbanel gives two approaches. One of them is very close to what the Rav said, or what the Rav says is very close to the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says, I'll just give you a few choice pieces. Take a look. It's amazing. He says the following. You don't have it. Don't look. I have my own notes. I don't give you everything. Because you'd see the Abarvanel, you'd be terrified. You'd leave. It's such small print. And he says he makes the parallel between the story of Yosef and his brothers and the Egypt experience. And here the parallel, by the way, is perfect. They sell their brother into slavery where? To Egypt. They're going to be sold into slavery in Egypt. They cast him into the pit. In Egypt, kol haben hayilod, every child who will be born, hayoro tashlichu, throw him into the Nile. They sent him down to Mitzrayim. They had to go down to Mitzrayim. He became a slave. They became slaves. He suffered. They suffered. He takes every step of the whole Yosef story with his brothers. And it's all paralleled by what happens to the Jewish people in Egypt. And he goes even further. He says some fascinating things. At one point, he disagrees with something that our rabbis say, or not, I wouldn't say disagree, he considers it homiletics. He wonders why does everybody have to suffer because of the Yosef sale? Everybody suffers. Why does everybody have to suffer? So he says, well, let's take a look. Reuven tried to save him, but Reuven still carried guilt to begin with. Aval Hashem Manachmi, they said, we're all guilty. We're all guilty. All that Reuven was able to do was save him, that he shouldn't be killed, but he was part of those who hated him. He despised him. Just like the brothers did. He says, what about Yosef? Why do Yosef's children suffer in Mitzrayim? So he says, because he also carries part of the guilt. He brought an evil report to his father. He also carries. Yaakov carries guilt. He should have insinuated himself, and more than that, he favored Yosef, and by favoring Yosef, he set the stage and the groundwork. He makes for him the ketonat pasim. But here, as an aside, he says, since the sin of Yosef and Yaakov was less than the sin of the others, Yaakov and Yosef, he says, are the only ones who are buried in Eretz Israel. So I know you're going to jump, because Chazal say all of the tribes were buried in Eretz Israel. He says that's trash. No, the only ones about whom it says clearly that they were buried in Eretz Israel, Yaakov and Yosef. And then he says, take a look at what happened. They had used the goat to fool their father that Joseph was dead. They became enslaved to a people that worshipped the A's and the Tzon. And their ultimate kapora is going to come with Korban Pesach, when they're able to slaughter the the A's. Unbelievable. And then he takes a completely different approach. He says, maybe there's another way to look at it all. It's not punishment, but there's an objective. There are two objectives. Objective one is that the Jewish people should learn about God, that He exists, that His divine providence is inextricably intertwined with Jewish history, and that He is there and able to be present for Klal Yisrael when they need Him. And for the Egyptians, you'll take a look this week, Sedra, it says a number of things. By every one of the Makos, it says, Leman Teda, so you should know, Ki Ani Hashem, that I'm God. Leman Teda, so that you should know, Ki Ani Hashem Bekerev Haaretz, I'm God in the midst of the land. Leman Teda, so that you should know, Ki Ein Komoni, there is none like me. God is sending great messages to the Jewish people and the Egyptians through the Mitzrayim experience. I'll tell you what I want to say. What I want to add to this whole picture is the following. There aren't really two approaches. One looks at it like punishment, and one looks at it like instruction. Punishment, what seems to be punishment, takes the form of instruction. And sometimes instruction has to be done through what is suffering. That's what the Medrash is telling us. The big Medrash. The big Medrash is telling us, one might look at certain experiences as though it's punishment. It's not punishment. By the way, God never just inflicts pain for the sake of inflicting pain. All pain is for the purpose of growth. God isn't cruel. Do we grow from it? Whether we grow from it or not depends on how we are going to look at it. That already is the Rav in Kol Dodi, in Kol Dodi Dofek. And you know what? I'll say that in the ultimate sense, the Rav wouldn't have asked the question that the last two shurim have been about, why? The Rav writes, when Nebuch tragedy strikes, the Jew doesn't ask why, because he knows that there's no way whatsoever he'll ever find out. You know what the Jew asks himself? What am I supposed to do with it? How am I going to turn this experience into something of value? How am I going to take this negative, terrible experience and turn it into something that is positive, that has the great seeds of growth in it? Klal Yisrael, through the experience of Mitzrayim, emerge as a goy gadol. You know what Klal Yisrael are? The rose amongst the thorns. It grows most beautiful when it is amongst the thorns. All of the nurturing, those experiences, should last Klal Yisrael for all of history. But I'll tell you, there's a condition. The condition is, as long as one sees himself as part of the covenantal community of Klal Yisrael. If you step out of that community, then not only will you have lost all of the great wealth of human experience and human feeling, but one can turn into somebody absolutely cruel. And unfortunately, we have these experiences every day. I mean, we have experience every day. You know. If I'm going to start talking about everything that upsets me, first of all, I'll upset you all. And there's old age to up here. We need, you understand, and this we'll have to talk about at greater length, that art can be something that glorifies a lady shahid. All right, that's one for the women, you understand, a lady shahid. How do you like that? No, what I'm saying is there's absolutely quality. Now they're going to enlist more women. Why should the Taka be only limited to the men? And this is art. And then I read the papers, and I think we're crazy people. Freedom of expression. What are you talking about? What did that ambassador in Sweden do? Doesn't he understand what freedom of expression means? You can express yourself and say anything. Ah, but if never a prime minister is killed, so then all of those who opposed his policies are denied the right of free expression. All of a sudden, no, words can kill. Works of art can also kill. But no, when you step out of the covenantal community, what happens is the Kopf wird dreht. You're no longer the repository or the one who inherits all this profound understanding of beauty, of morality, of ethics. Doesn't work. Klal Yisrael went through an experience, and why is Zecher Liyetziat Mitzrayim so fundamental to all of Torah? And why Bechol Dor V'Dor, in every generation, Chayev Adam Lido Tat Atzmo, a person has to see himself as though he went out of Egypt? And why on the night of the Seder, Matchil Bignut, you have to go through the story of the pain and the suffering? So you should relive it. And if you relive it, you know what's going to happen? You are going to maintain your contact with all that Klal Yisrael learned in their bodies, in their souls during that whole experience. So that whole experience wasn't a waste. Wasn't a waste. It was not punishment. Not punishment. It was instruction. And there are certain things that require, well, painful instruction. Shalom, shmatonos, tovos. God is ready to give three great gifts to the Jewish people. And kulam lo nitnu el al yedei yisurim. And thank God, at least we here are able to embrace all three of them and say to Rabbeinu Shel Olam, thank you for Torah, thank you for Eretz Yisrael, and thank you for Olam Haba. We can say them all. We don't differentiate between one and the other. The whole Mitzrayim experience is an education. There's no such thing as God bringing suffering just for the sake of suffering. No such thing. Everything is instruction. That's what the Medrash is saying. You should know that the whole Mitzrayim experience that's going to be described in Sefer Shmos falls under the category of a father, as the Pasuk says in Dvarim, Ki kasher yaser ish et beno, as a man admonishes and chastises his son, Kain Hashem Elokecha miyasdeko, so too God chastises and admonishes you. So it's not simply some kind of a random experience. It's an experience that goes to the heart of all of Jewish consciousness throughout the ages. That's it.